As Belarus deals with a potential election controversy, the Czech Republic is facing a possible medical crisis. Fed up with shockingly low pay and long hours, doctors are threatening to leave the country en masse. More than a quarter of all Czech physicians have signed a declaration threatening to emigrate to better-paying European countries unless the Czech government addresses their concerns by the end of the year. So far, the cash-starved health ministry is ignoring the warnings and moving ahead with cost-cutting plans. From Děčín, NPR's Eric Westervelt reports.
33-year-old Dr. Peter Igaz has taken a leave of absence from the emergency room and these days spends his time like some medical troubadour driving a surly old 1975 ambulance across the Czech Republic. He has a simple message: pay doctors more than a street sweeper. Keep us here. Painted on the front and back of the battered ambulance are the words in Czech: thank you, we're leaving. Dr. Igaz is taking his message to hospitals and town squares, urging citizens to support the efforts of the doctors' union to change how physicians are treated and convince people that the threat to leave is real. He says smaller hospitals could be forced to close. He blames Czech government corruption, incompetence, and communism's bitter hangover for the doctors' problems.
Doctors are so sick and tired of this situation. We are riding this ship to the bottom of the ocean for long enough.
Over coffee at a cafe along the Elbe River in the border city of Děčín, the gastroenterologist says nearly a decade into his career, he makes only about 700 euros or $900 a month, enough to pay rent on a modest flat and food, but not much else. The doctor often works 80 or more hours a week. The starting salary for a doctor in the Czech Republic is only $11,000 a year. It's a prestigious job, but we can't eat prestige, Igaz says, and warns that the Czech healthcare system is falling apart.
I see that if I don't leave my job, I will just accept these terrible conditions and I will see the system collapsing with me. And this is the last call of desperate people that are still left here. Let's do something about it before it's really too late.
In Děčín's cold, snow-dusted town square, Dr. Igaz and another member of the doctors' union attract passers-by with offers of free blood pressure screening. Next to a folding card table and two chairs stands a large cardboard cutout of a doctor with a clicking digital clock that reads, "Countdown to Exodus." Anna Korlova, a heavyset woman, takes advantage of the free screening. She says she supports the doctors' reform efforts.
I'm afraid that more and more educated Czech people are leaving and moving abroad. I think the authorities should think about this and do more to help them stay. They should be paid more.
The Czech government largely dismisses the threat as a gimmick. Government officials say they want to raise salaries, reduce hours, and improve conditions, but they say it's just impossible right now given the financial crisis. Vlastimil Sershin, spokesman for the Czech health minister, even sees a silver lining in the healthcare crisis. More work, but additional pay for those who stay.
Yes, it's a problem if doctors leave, but it will also allow us to raise the salary and benefits of those who do stay, not only of other doctors, but of nurses and other hospital workers, too. I must say also that many are just threatening to leave, and we don't foresee that many will actually go.
But many, especially young physicians, insist they are serious. And with a current shortfall of 7,000 doctors, German health authorities are champing at the bit. At a recent recruitment fair in Prague, representatives from some 30 German and Austrian hospitals showed up, offering Czech doctors up to five times their salary for about half the hours. Dr. Alexander Zverka has worked for a dozen years as a gynecologist at Děčín's big public hospital. He'd like to see more of his wife and two kids and get a decent salary.
What can I do? If I do nothing now, I will stay at this level for the rest of my life.
Dr. Zverka says he's getting ready to send out resumes to hospitals in Germany, the UK, and maybe Sweden. He says he'll likely give notice January 1st. Thank you. I'm leaving. Eric Westervelt, NPR News, Děčín, Czech Republic.
You're listening to Science Friday from NPR. I'm Ira Flatow. Up next this hour, we're going to...
Ira?
Annette Heiss, our senior producer, has joined us. Oh, you snuck right into the studio.
Sorry, I hate to interrupt, but there's a deadline approaching, and I think our listeners want to hear about it.
A deadline.
Some energy efficient tax credits are set to expire on December 31st this year. And I think this is some news you can use for our listeners.
Now, I know why you're interested in this, because of people who follow your blog. They watch you fixing your house out there in Pennsylvania, right?
Right.
And you're trying to find the most energy efficient way to recoup your dollars.
Yeah, that's right. I'm interested in trying to cut my electric bill. I've been at this project for a couple years, and I'll brag a little bit. I've since I started, I took 200 kilowatt hours off my monthly average bill.
Wow. Yeah. And save money doing that. And you have
I didn't save money.
You didn't?
My electricity rates went up by almost the same amount. So my bill
did they
is
fool
even.
You? Well, so you're a little. So now you're looking for new ways, and you say if there are things that we should do before the end of the year.
Yes, that's right. That's right.
Like what?
Well, if you have a couple extra dollars to spend, I would recommend a storm door. You can, if you install a storm door between now and the end of the year,
right,
you can get back 30% of the cost of that storm door. And so if you, up to a certain amount, so if you pay, say, $300 for a storm door and you file the paperwork with your taxes, you can get back about $90.
Wow, that's pretty good money.
Yeah, it's not bad.
Yeah, and so there, and what else? Give me something else.
Okay,
so if I don't want the storm door under my tree, what else can I do?
These credits are going to expire on December 31st. You can, if that's a little bit too much money to spend for you, you can pick up some insulation for your house, and that includes weather stripping, spray foam in a can. You can
good stocking stuffer.
Stuff your stocking with some insulation.
Well, I mean that can of spray, you know, that you put into the wall sockets or something that really seal up the place.
If it's a product designed to make your home more energy efficient, to seal up, you know, drafts around the door, then yes, it qualifies for the tax credit.
So even if it's like a 10-buck item, I can still get that, say, $3 or something.
Yeah, if you're willing to, you know, keep your receipt and do the paperwork. So you can get 30% back up to $1,500. And that $1,500 is for 2009 and 2010 combined. Mm-hmm. So if you took the credit last year, you can't do it for 2010. And I should add also that that this has to be your primary residence for these credits. And if you share a house with somebody, it's $1,500 for the house. It's not per person.
Right. What else have you got on your list of things I could say?
Well, it might be a little late in the year for you to do this, but a new roof would qualify.
We're having a barn raising at my house between now and the end of the year.
And that includes metal roofs or asphalt roofs. Also heating systems, air source heat pumps, a propane furnace, and this is a doable one, a biomass stove. That's a stove that burns corn or wood pellets. And if you get that in your house and up and running by December 31st, you can get 30% back up to $1,500 for that. So basically, if you spend $5,000 on these improvements, you're going to maximize this tax credit. And I should add that some of these are going to be extended into next year in the bill that was just passed by Congress, the new tax bill that was just passed, and the president is signing, I think, in 5 minutes. but it's my understanding that the new credits are not going to be as beneficial as these are. So act now. You want to get and these things have to be in place by December 31st.
So while you're not going to be popping that champagne, you're going to be caulking that window.
I'm gonna multitask on New Year's Eve. I will have a glass of champagne in one hand and a caulk gun in the other.
Now we hear about the credits for things like solar panels and stuff like that.
Those are still in place, and those don't expire until 2016. Now that's for solar panels, geothermal heat pumps, small wind turbines, if you're thinking about putting one of those in your backyard.
Mm-hmm.
And there's no upper limit on that. So that doesn't stop at $1,500.
Mm-hmm.
And you have a little bit more time to plan ahead for those.
Mm-hmm. And okay, what else? Now I've got the stocking stuffers. I've got the storm door under the tree. What else can I do?
Well, if you're looking to cut your electricity bill in a way that you don't even have to spend any money, you can unplug that second refrigerator that you might have in your basement.
It's got that one giant pizza in it that fits no other place.
Right, maybe a turkey in there. You had a turkey in there at Thanksgiving and a bottle of soda. Get rid of it, because according to everything I've read, that's one of the a common thing that a lot of people have in their house, and it really just sucks energy up. And I did a little calculation. If you go to energystar.gov, which is a great website for figuring out how much it costs to run your dryer, or should you wash in cold water, or any appliance that you have in your house, you want to know how much it costs to run it, go to energystar.gov, and they have tons of information. And they have one of my favorite things is the refrigerator retirement savings calculator. So it's like it's actually a little refrigerator. You pick your model, whether you had side-by-side or the freezer on the top. You put in the year that you bought it, and it will tell you. You put in how much you pay for your electricity per kilowatt hour, and it'll run a calculation and tell you how much it's costing you to keep that second refrigerator going in your basement. And here's what I calculated it for my for what I pay, $835 for 5 years, which is about $167 a year to keep that refrigerator going. So almost a whole electric bill.
Wow, a whole month of, wow.
Then that's for an older refrigerator. Yeah. That was the one that I got rid of when I replaced my refrigerator recently was about a 1990 refrigerator. So EnergyStar.gov says if your refrigerator is made before 1993, that it's probably a good idea to say goodbye.
If you got that old Crosley, remember those Crosley with the handle that opens up, or any old refrigerator, because they were so energy inefficient in those days.
Yes.
Just sitting there and running, I think it's probably one, along with the air conditioning system, which are not, they're not running here in the wintertime.
Right.
It's probably the single biggest user of electricity, right, in the house?
In your house right now, it's, if you have electric heat, that's probably it, and also your water heater. Those are the things that really suck up the energy.
And if we replace our water heater, we get a credit for that?
You don't. If you replace it, Oh, you're testing me now. I think if it's a heat pump water heater, right, there are credits. But you might also qualify for some credits that vary by state, and you can find out if you can get that. If there are credits in your state, by going to the same website where they have a map, you click on your state, and it'll tell you what qualifies. And I have to say, for my state, Pennsylvania, they ran out of money
because so many people wanted to do this.
So many people wanted to do it. They have a waiting list now for rebates. But I did go to my electricity provider, and they also give rebates. And I found that you can get, for instance, $50 back on a refrigerator, $75 back on a clothes washer, $10 back on a dehumidifier, and a couple other things. A programmable thermostat, they'll give you $50 back if you install one of those. And those just have to be Energy Star qualified.
Wow, and you could put that in yourself. And that's about, it pays for itself.
Right, that's
about
what they cost. I priced them at a couple of the big box stores, and they cost between $30 and $100, depending on how fancy, if you want it to be different on the weekends or just Monday through
Friday. So $50 is a wash.
Yeah.
It's a wash. Now, for folks who are still buying those Christmas tree lights,
yes,
can you save money there if you get the right kind of lights?
You can get LED lights now. And I was looking at those the other day, and they're about $12 for a string of 60. They use significantly less energy than the regular Christmas lights that we're used to, but they're expensive. You're putting out some money up front, but they do use a lot less. And they, I think another added bonus to those is that they burn not hot, so they're not a fire hazard.
Mm-hmm. Anything else that people can do to lower their bills?
Well, I brought you a present.
Oh, it's got a little. Actually, it's got a little.
Happy Hanukkah! Bone. Sorry, it's late.
it's
kilowatt easy.
It's a electricity usage monitor. Oh, this is the thing you plug your appliance in.
Right, you plug that into the wall, the kilowatt, and then you plug your appliance into the kilowatt. You program in how much you pay for electricity, and it'll tell you how much it's costing you to run that thing, your laptop, your fan.
Because there's something draining all the time, even when it's off, right?
Well, you can check it.
Yeah.
You can check it with the Kilowatt Easy. Plug it into there and see how much. Is it really true that when you leave that cell phone charger in the wall that it's, you know, contributing a lot to your energy bill? You can do a test.
Well, thank you very much, Annette.
My pleasure.
I'm going to take this home and try it out tonight.
Okay.
Senior producer Annette Heist, you can follow her blog. She's out there saving energy for us all and learning how to do it. Thanks a lot.
You're welcome.
If you're still doing some holiday shopping, consider that today is Free Shipping Day. The online movement started in 2008 with 250 businesses promising free shipping and delivery by Christmas Eve. Well, this year, some 1,700 businesses are taking part. Big companies like Dell Computers, Saks Fifth Avenue, and Mattel. Also, tiny companies like Where the Streets Have Your Name. They sell framed photos of street signs like Melissa Drive or Robert Lane. And then there's the family-owned business Kaleidoscopes to You. Carl and Jean Schilling have been selling kaleidoscopes for more than 20 years. And Jean Schilling joins us now from company headquarters in Manly, Iowa. Jean, taking a little break from your work to talk to us. Thanks.
Actually, Melissa, it's nice to sit down for a few moments.
It's been a little busy today?
Very busy. It's been a wonderful season for us. This is our strongest season in the last 3 years.
Well, let's talk about the free shipping. Usually, absolutely, you offer free shipping on orders of $150 or more, but today it's free shipping across the board. Why'd you do that?
Well, how this works, this is our first year taking part, and we thought, you know, this is a fun way to try and drive some more traffic to our business, and it really has. The traffic that we're seeing on our website is more than double what we had yesterday.
Well, have you figured out the math? I mean, is there sort of a tipping point at which, you know, the money that you're spending on shipping is outweighed by the sales, the increased sales you're getting?
Absolutely. Yes. I would say any order under the $35, $40 bracket, we will lose money on today. But we thought, let's give it a try. We figure we'll have enough orders over that range where we won't lose money on the shipping, and let's drive the traffic. And, you know, there's a few orders where it's a single $6 kaleidoscope, and you bet we're going to ship it free for today. And that's part of the fun of it. We're getting kaleidoscopes out there for people to get into Christmas stockings.
It's the right shape, isn't it?
Exactly. It's long. It's cylindrical. It fits right in there. We've even had Santa Claus order a few kaleidoscopes.
Is that right?
Yeah.
You know, I wonder if people get used to the notion of free shipping, and then we expect it all the time. We don't want to pay for shipping after we know what it's like not to.
That day may come. It may be like long distance. Think about what you spent on long distance 30 years ago and mm-hmm. what you spend on it now, and I'm sure it's less. So I don't know. We'll have to see how that shapes in the future.
So meantime, the UPS man or woman in your neighborhood today is getting a little bit of an extra workout, it sounds like.
Yes. We have great service from our local UPS driver. I better give a shout-out to Dan. Why not? They're a fabulous team around here. He'll come in and say, man, you guys really worked hard today.
Well, Jean Schilling, have a happy holiday, and thanks for talking with us.
Absolutely. Thanks for your time, Melissa.
Jean Schilling and her husband own Kaleidoscopes to You in Manly, Iowa. It's one of more than 1,700 businesses taking part in Free Shipping Day today.
This is NPR.
From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Melissa Block.
And I'm Robert Siegel. The U.S. buys a lot more from China than it sells there, and many American policymakers think that might change if only China let its currency appreciate. The U.S. can't simply force the issue by intervening directly in currency markets. But a generation ago, the world of global finance worked differently. Here's Hannah Jaffe-Walt of NPR's Planet Money team on the last time the U.S. tried to get a rising Asian power to strengthen its currency.
It used to be that you could get five men in a room and they could change the course of global economics. That's basically what happened September 22nd, 1985. It was a secret plan, and the man, it can now be told, responsible for the secret meeting was David Mulford, Undersecretary for International Affairs at the U.S. Treasury.
It was an exciting period of time. The 80s were very exciting.
Here was the problem the five men were trying to solve. Japan was growing fast, really fast. They were selling all sorts of things to the rest of the world that the U.S. used to sell. The U.S. was upset about this. If you want to relate this story to today at any point, just replace the word Japan with China. Anyway, in 1985, David Mulford went to four other rich countries and said, we have to find a way to let Japan grow, just not so fast and not in a way that hurts the rest of us. And everyone, even Japan, agreed to get together and make a plan.
Provided it is kept absolutely secret until the moment that we do it. Because it is only with the element of surprise, as well as the size of the operation, that we would shock the markets when we acted.
On September 22nd, 1985, finance ministers from the U.S., Germany, Japan, the U.K., and France all sat around a big wooden table. They're at the Plaza Hotel in New York. And here is what they decided. They would all sell a lot of dollars, out of the blue, all at once. This would lower the value of the dollar, strengthen the value of the yen, and make American exports cheaper. And it would have an immediate effect. Gary Dorsch was working as a trader at the time for a firm on the Chicago Mercantile Exchange. And he, like traders all over the world, remembers that night well.
It was, you know, pretty eye-popping. We were in a state of shock. And when the market opened up, there was plenty of pandemonium.
The plan, it seemed, had worked. It worked really, really well. It worked way too well. The dollar fell, and then the dollar fell some more. In 2 years, the dollar fell around 40% from its peak. So on February 22nd, 1987, less than 2 years later, the same countries all got together again, and they announced another plan, one that essentially undid everything they had done at the Plaza. Instead of selling dollars, this time they bought dollars to try to increase the price of the dollar, or at least to stop it from falling. Ted Truman watched this happen from the Federal Reserve in Washington, D.C. He was an economist there.
One of the problems with using a tool is if it doesn't work, you look foolish, and then if you have it do a job that it's not really capable of doing.
Did the U.S. look foolish?
I think so. It was not a happy ending.
It is true that those tools available are pretty imprecise. Truman says the U.S. looked foolish. David Mulford with the Treasury chooses to remember the whole thing differently.
My mother one day was flying from Tucson, Arizona, to Chicago. She sat next to a fellow. And when she said, "I have a son who's at the Treasury," and she mentioned my name, he jumped up and said, "This is the guy who saved America by depreciating the dollar and keeping us competitive and keeping jobs."
Governments always want to control the global economy to their advantage. We wanted to in the 1980s, and we want to now. And for a long time, America and a handful of other countries did that. But the Plaza Agreement was a bit of a turning point. It looked like those days were over. The economy is now too big and moves too fast, too many powerful players. Today, everyone in America wants to sell more to the rest of the world. We want China to adjust its currency. But there's no secret room where a handful of men can sit together and make it all happen. I'm Chana Jaffe-Walt, NPR News.
Support for Planet Money comes from Ally Bank, offering its Raise Your Rate CD as well as an online savings account and a money market account. AllyBank.com.